We all get thrown off course. Sometimes it's the teacher who told us we weren't any good, or the school that rejected our application, or the job we didn't get, or the launch where no one bought. It's different for everyone, but everyone has some version or many versions of this story. For Araki, it was when she was 16, and after having devoted a childhood to making art, to loving art, she didn't have the grades for art school. So she stopped. For 10 years, she didn't make any art. She studied international business, traveled the world for exchange programs and internships, and worked for startups and big companies. Until depression hit. Until her eyes began to hurt and she had trouble focusing and she was tired more than she wasn't. Until the day she heard a voice, loud and clear, in the middle of a park that said to her, "Go back to what you loved when you were younger." So she did. For the last 6 years, Araki has devoted her life to her art, just as she did when she was younger. Araki is an illustrator and a Reiki healer. She no longer works for big corporations and international business. She makes art, and she lives art, choosing to follow whatever is next on this creative journey, despite the uncertainty and the doubt. This is her path, and it is what she loves. Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn, founder of the Creativity Habit Collective, where artists and makers come together in community to get what they need so they make what they must through intimate gatherings, circles, teaching seminars, workshops, and co-creating sessions. A place to form deep connections, friendship, and get all the support, love, inspiration, and courage you need to go out into the world and share all of who you are and what you make. You can learn more at thecreativityhabit.com. And you're listening to the Creativity Habit Podcast. Today's guest is illustrator Araki Koman. Some things we talk about are leaving art for 10 years at 16 to pursue something, quote unquote, more practical, how depression changed her life, and the message that started it all, signs of burnout, the power of wabi-sabi to create what is true, and how to pursue what you love despite the fear, the doubt, and uncertainty of it all. May it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Hello, Araki. Welcome to the Creativity Habit Podcast.
Hello, Daphne. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Typically, I start by asking a very simple question. Simple in the sense that it's a short one, which is, how did creativity show up for you as a little girl? I actually want to start with a quote. Well, I'm paraphrasing to some degree, something that you said in your podcast about creativity. And I would like to share this quote as a way of actually framing our conversation. So I'll share it and then I'll ask the first question. The fundamental steps to reach deep satisfaction in our lives as creatives and beyond is to slow down first, be intentional, be real with what's working and what's not in our life, reconnect with your true self, reconnect with what you're really passionate about, voice what's true about you. Then you have to let go. That's the next step. Let go of limiting beliefs that are stopping you from tapping into your inner power, society's rules, industry rules, what's not serving you to reach the level that you want to reach. And then the last stage is about expanding. Only after slowing down, reconnecting with yourself, letting go of what's no longer serving you, will you have a strong foundation that will allow you to stop the fear of missing out and being distracted with what everyone else is doing, the external inspiration, ideals, everything, to the point that we disregard what is within ourselves. Only then will you expand to become the true authentic creative that you are, the true authentic person that you are. And I want to start with that as a way of shaping our conversation around these steps of slowing down, reconnecting, letting go, and stepping into the true creative that you are and looking at that through your journey. So I would love to start with the beginning of that and to step back a little. So of course, before you reconnect with who you are, there's a disconnection. Mm-hmm. Where did that begin for you?
Yeah. So the disconnection for me happened during my teenage years. I was a very connected child. Like, I knew exactly what I wanted, what I was interested in. I was always drawing. It was my way of expressing myself. It was my safe zone, my safe space, where I had the feeling like I belong somewhere, which was not the case at the time, because I was a loner, and I'm still in many ways, but at the time drawing was my way of attracting people's attention around me. And I lost that when I became a teenager, where it's usually the time where most of us actually try to fit into a box. Like, we kind of lose touch with who we really are. We start questioning ourselves. And for me, that's when I started wondering whether I was good enough at what I was doing and whether it was worth pursuing as an adult.
So there was this way that art really held you. It was a safe place for you. It was how you came out to yourself. And yet in your teenage years, it became more about, am I good enough to do this work?
Yes. I mean, somehow, like, I thought it was strong enough to actually, you know, survive this difficult period, I think I was still deep down looking for external validation. So when I started, you know, changing, and I grew up quite quickly. I mean, my body grew quite quickly. Like, at 10 years old, I already had my periods. And I felt like I was losing control of, there was something that I was not in control of. And somehow it gave me a lot of self-doubt. I was seen as something that I was not, like, for most people in the external world. I was older than I looked. And deep down, I was still the same person. So I felt like there was a disconnect. And that disconnect actually created a lot of self-doubt. So that's when I was more vulnerable to external criticism.
And when you started, wondering, like, am I good enough? You know, you're caught up in this world, like we all are, of wanting that external validation. I mean, it's part of being human, but it sounds like you were thrust into it maybe more quickly than a lot of people are. And so you're in this space of wondering if you're good enough. And then what decision do you make as a result of those questions? What happens to your art?
So what happened is, I was very convinced. I was, until basically the year after, like, what is it in America? So basically it was the first year of high school. I mean, I was still trying to push that passion as far as I could, and I had the dream of, you know, going into an art school after high school, and even during high school, but I didn't have the grades to be able to do it. So that's when I started being shaken. I was not basically approved by the system because of the grades that I had, and not because of the art that I was doing, but to me it was linked somehow, and I literally stopped everything. Like, I suppressed that part of myself entirely when I had the realization that it was not it was not worth pursuing. And I think it was a way for me to avoid being hurt, being rejected by not trying. So instead, I literally buried myself or immersed myself into another passion that I had at the time. Which was basically the idea of traveling. It was a big dream that I had. And instead of when I suppressed my art and my creativity, I went all in into the other pursuit that looked more acceptable to other people on the outside. It felt like basically my goal was to do a business school, international business school, because it's something that is highly regarded in I would say in the French system in general. Like, when I was saying that I wanted to do an art school, people were, they had their own fear about this path. They were telling me, are you sure? Are you going to find a job? Is it serious? Like, and I, even for myself, I felt guilty to actually want that for myself, given that my family situation was not like the most wealthy. Like my parents were struggling financially, and I felt like if I had to invest in something, in like if I had to invest money in my education, it had to be in something that was guaranteed, where I had a guaranteed success in life, which was not the case for art. I mean, like many people know, but yeah, at the time I felt like it was the safest place to go. And I mean, I didn't feel like I was abandoning something. I was kind of validating my next step so much. I just felt like it was a phase of my life and it was over. So I didn't question myself at all for at least 10 years.
It's interesting to me because your body developed earlier than a lot of other girls around you. And it seems like your mind, at least the mind that we tend to have as adults, developed earlier, the sense of responsibility, the sense of this is a more financially smart decision, all of that. Like to have that so young is just, it's fascinating to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It wasn't my orientation. I'll just leave it at that. But
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I'd say like, I mean, I'm an introvert, and I don't know if you read the book, what's the name, Quiet?
It was life-changing for me. It was amazing.
Yeah, for me as well. And I mean, introvert people are usually very observant. And I could feel that there was a lot of tension around me growing up, coming from that lack of money, lack of security. And even though my parents were not, I told my parents I wanted to be an artist, I mean, they knew it already, especially my dad. It was really encouraging. So when I told them, okay, no, I'm done, I don't want to do that anymore, my dad was a bit puzzled. He was, oh, but I know that's what you really wanted to do. Like, you seem to be quite convinced. And I was so convinced with my own, like, new decision that I managed to convince him that I was over it and it was fine. And that's what I do for many years. At that time, it was definitely over.
That's amazing. So then, keeping in mind, like, the what I read in the beginning, there's this coming back to who you are. And the first step, as you say, is to slow down and be intentional. What was that first step for you in coming back to art?
So the slowing down for me, so basically there was a phase where I was, I guess, so immersed into my new quest about traveling and discovering the world and learning new languages. So it was basically, I did a business school for, I have a master's degree in international marketing. So I didn't stop at all, like between second year of high school when I decided it was over, I would not pursue art. I just went all in and trying, I was focusing on goals related to that intention to work in business and travel. And I managed to reach all those goals. I guess my ego was also very much satisfied because I managed to go into studies I would not destined to actually do, like coming from my background. And yeah, I traveled a lot. I lived in many different countries. And it's only when I got my master's degree, I came back to France after spending 8 months in America, in Canada and the US. I started working for a startup in online marketing, and it was quite exciting for me because we basically had to launch the company, like it was an American company, we had to launch it in the French market, so it was a good challenge for me. But very quickly I realized it was a bit boring for me, like to actually stay after the launch. But the awakening actually happened because I was actually managing, during this job I was managing a graphic designer. Basically seeing that it was not as good as I thought you had to be as a graphic designer, that it was like the first seed that was planted, like a reminder, somehow a reminder that that's something I wanted to do initially. After that experience, when I decided to quit that job, I had the intention to potentially try and see if there was the possibility to study something a little bit more creative than what I was doing. Instead of that, I somehow, you know, fell into like the trap of another job in my field which felt much secure like it was not a startup, it was a bigger company. Okay, like maybe the company is bigger, like it's a different context, it's more settled. I mean, I guess the experience will be different, so I might like it. So I took the job and it was too much. What I was doing during that job was so far away than my natural abilities. Like I was doing mainly very number-based operation every day. I was using Excel every day. And it was so far away from my natural abilities. It was, I think, the beginning of a depression that happened.
It's interesting. Well, I would like to actually touch a little bit into the depression, because this is so often what happens, it seems like, on the creative path if we are ignoring what it is that we're meant to do, that something comes up, whether it's an illness, physically, mentally, whether we suffer some kind of trauma, but it seems that something shows up to say, hey, you're not paying attention. So for you, it sounds like that was depression.
Oh, yeah, it was. So basically the job was for Microsoft France. And again, given where I'm from and my background, like, and working for that company, it seemed like I made it, you know, like I was, and even myself, I was convincing myself that it was going to be the beginning of a long career in that field, and I will enjoy my life from then on. But that was not the case. There was a disconnect between how people were perceiving me based on the job that I had and how I felt inside. Yeah. And I mean, every day I would go to work and I was not looking forward to be at the desk and work on all those data on Excel. And I like working for myself. So it was very difficult for me to actually fit into like this corporate mindset. So basically how it started for me is it was difficult for me to actually look at the computer for a very long time. So I ended up having to go to the eye doctor, who told me that I had to wear glasses, like reading glasses, because of that. And I was quite surprised because I've been using the computer since I was 5 years old. And I never had any issue with my eyesight. So I felt surprised and
so that was a bit, the first thing was,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, what were other ways that it showed up for you apart from the eyesight?
Yeah. So there was the eyesight and I was feeling sleepy most of the time. And I started having to drink coffee, which I never do. I don't like the taste, but it was the only thing that was keeping me awake, because otherwise I was like sleepy, even on my desk. Sometimes I was almost falling asleep and it never happened after that. I was pushing further than I was supposed to, I really guess. So I started researching online about the symptoms that I had. And even my brain was functioning really slowly. So I basically self-diagnosed myself with ADD, attention deficit disorder, which for most women, it doesn't show like ADHD usual symptoms, which for men, especially young men, it shows with hyperactivity. But for me, it was the opposite. From the outside, it looked like I was not so active, but my brain couldn't stop functioning. I couldn't focus at all.
That you couldn't keep your attention on whatever was in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. It was really, really difficult. So I self-diagnosed myself. And every day after work, I would go to a park, do more research, and try to just find solutions to what was happening to me. And I was so convinced at the time that I had ADD, started to find ways to fix myself. And one of the remedy for ADHD was meditation. So basically I discovered that meditation was one way, but also they encourage people with ADD and ADHD to do creative work, to embrace creative careers. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. So it actually confirmed my initial intention that I had after leaving that first job. Yeah, so that's when I started meditating in that park.
And then in the park, you heard a voice. Yeah. What did the voice say?
The voice said, sorry. the voice said, come back to what you used to do when you were younger.
And that even now, it's a strong response for you, emotional response.
Yeah, it's so weird because I don't realize it. Yeah, but yeah, it was so clear in my mind. And from then on, I just, I took it very seriously because it was so clear. And I told myself, okay, I knew it from the beginning. I mean, that's the sign were just reminders of what I was initially planning to do when I was younger. So now I'm going to follow what that younger version of me wanted to do.
Why do you think after all this time, and I've heard you tell this story before, and I'm sure you've told it many more times than I've heard it. Why do you think it has such a strong response still, strong emotional response?
Because I'm still on that path. Mm-hmm. I'm still on the quest to follow that voice. And I sometimes, you know, like most things in life, we lose track. Even though I've been like an illustrator now, like committed illustrator for the past three, four years, I still get sidetracked. And not only with illustration, with other things that I knew from the beginning, other things that I loved at the time, which I gave up. And now I'm reminded to keep following that because it's really leading me where I feel the most alive.
Okay, I'd like to explore this a little more because I feel I'm in the same place over and over and over. I find myself in the same place. And I just want to dive into this part of it because it's such a valuable, rich area. So there's this clarity that you have. Go back to what you loved as a little girl and when you were young. And then there's still all this stuff like that can sidetrack you and take you away from it. What are some of the things that sidetrack you? And then how do you pull yourself back when you see that happening to keep on this path of doing what makes you come most alive?
Like the thing that I got sidetracked by where, you know, for example, as an illustrator, like at the beginning, I was really happy when I found it again, where it actually led to something that was like, that became professional, which I was not planning at all. I was just, you know, exploring that interest that I had, and it led to interest from people, and it became a job. So I felt really happy for quite a while until, I mean, I was satisfied with my work, but then I felt like I had to follow what other people were doing somehow. Like there was something with the industry that I had to do. It kept happening over and over again. Like, in that, it's literally what happened from the beginning. I knew I was good at drawing at the time. I liked what I was doing. And no one could actually take me out of it. But then when I became a teenager, I got sidetracked. And I felt like what I wanted to do was not the right thing to do with your life. So I stopped. And that happened with illustration too. At the beginning, I was like, okay, my signature is black and white, minimal lines, and I would say like a raw aesthetic. And then I started doubting myself. I was like, okay, maybe I should add color. Maybe I should do that kind of job for that kind of companies. Maybe I should have this ambition, or maybe I should do all of the things that all other illustrators on Instagram do to get more success with my career.
Yeah. So that's more getting lost in the shoulds of whatever it is.
Yeah, the shoes that I didn't even care about. And then, like, usually when I wake up from that is when I get burned out in a direction that just doesn't align with what's easy for me. Whenever I get sidetracked from something that sounds like natural and appealing to me naturally, that's when I get lost along the way.
At this point, you recognize the symptoms of burnout?
Yeah, always. Like I get disgusted by my work. I get disgusted by what I do. I don't feel aligned with it anymore. And I almost want to give up everything. And that's when, again, the reminder of the voice saying, go back to what you used to want to do when you were younger. That's what wakes me up usually. Like I'm like, okay, yeah, that's right. That's what I like doing. That's why right now I mean, you might ask it at some point, but right now I'm actually starting to blend, like repost some of my old work on my social media to remind myself of what I really like beyond where I feel like I should be going. It's like a constant reminder of what I like deeply.
And I think the reason this is so important is because this is the struggle as creatives. There's this part of us that is saying, oh, there's something that's just me that I want to create that makes me come alive. And then there's this other part that says, but I need to do it the way that everybody else is doing it, or I should be doing it more like this, or there's all the other voices that come in. And this is this ongoing, what feels like ongoing battle for so many artists and makers. So in your personal experience, as you see that happening, one of the ways that you pull yourself back to what's true for you right now is posting older art on Instagram to remind yourself. What are some other ways that you work on tuning out the voices that say it should be this way and coming back to what's true for you?
So basically, recently, I'm going to leave soon, but I've been in Bali for the past 6 months. When I moved here, so basically what happened is I wanted to live in Japan. Like, it was the third time I was going to be in Japan, and I wanted to stay there for at least 1 year. So I had the visa for it. It was something that I had planned for the past 2 years. And I really know that's something that I really needed to do, and I would be happy being there. But what happened is I realized that basically when I arrived, I didn't feel as fulfilled as I thought I would be. Probably because I changed a lot, because I've been basically on a personal development and healing period over the past 2 years, like since I turned 30. And so many, many things shifted. So the first 2 times I went to Japan, I was just in love with everything. But that time, I was actually craving for authenticity because I felt like it was not present. It was something that I needed at that specific time in my life, and that's not what I had, what I could feel from there. So again, that voice came back and told me, go to Bali. Like, I had the word Bali really loud in my head when I was on my 5th month in Japan. And, you know, like at that point, I just told myself, okay, I think my subconscious knows more what I need than my conscious mind. I wanted to be in Japan, but that's not what my body is telling me. But now my intuition is telling me to go to Bali because I don't know what I need anymore. So I just literally, within 2 weeks, I left Japan. I packed everything. Well, it's quite easy because I'm a minimalist, so I don't have much things. But I packed my suitcase and I left. And I arrived in Bali. It was my first time in Southeast Asia. Logically, I don't like tropical countries. Like, that's the narrative I was telling myself. I don't like tropical countries. I don't like the heat. It was very, like, out of my comfort zone. But I came, and I've been here for 6 months now. And since being here, all the things I was craving when I was in Japan, I'm finding them all here. And I get the opportunity to explore a lot of other things I was really into when I was a child or when I was younger, which I never really embraced. For example, dancing. I used to love dancing when I was a child, but I got a lot of criticism and people laughing at me because I was not dancing like you're supposed to, like with the steps that you're supposed to do. Basically, when I stopped drawing, I also stopped dancing. And for the past years, I was just enjoying watching people dancing. And I always told myself, I'm not a good dancer. I just enjoy looking at people dancing. I'm a shy dancer. That's who I am. But basically, in Bali, I actually re-embraced all of that. I allowed myself to just follow the younger version of myself and just literally use her wisdom instead of my adult mind, which has been conditioned.
And so what has been rising up in that space?
So basically, I've done a lot of ecstatic dance here. Discovered recently 5 rhythms dance also. I was very self-conscious at the beginning because that's something that you do in public and you can, you know, judge what's happening around you, thinking that people are crazy or they are woo-woo. But to be honest, I after, like, you know, the inner criticism that was here at the beginning, I literally let go completely, and what came up was just a lot of joy and a lot of, like, liberation coming from my subconscious. Like, a lot of, I was crying of relief, because all those dances, like ecstatic dance, five rhythm, and many other movement, free movement modalities, what I love about them is that they allow you to follow your intuition and what's naturally coming up from you. So it's very intuitive. And for the most part of my life, when I stopped listening to my creative side, I suppressed a lot of things that were coming naturally. So now by doing things, by doing those movements without any instructions, it's actually as if it was a, you know, like, for the first time, I am allowing myself to stopping myself from being who I am.
So this is all connected to this first part of slowing down, being real with what's working and what's not, reconnecting to your true self, and voicing what's true about you. At this point, as it relates to your art and creativity, what are you seeing is true about you?
I'd say that I'm a very spiritual person. Like, basically, that's something also that somehow led me to study marketing, but I am fascinated by the human experience and, like, psychology and, like, I would say human behavior, even if at the time I was studying consumer behavior. I'm interested in psychology and metaphysical things. Yeah, things that are very soulful and raw. What I've done in Japan, and I think that's probably the reason why I came back there first, before coming to Bali, was I did an artist residency for a month in Sapporo, in Hokkaido, in the north of Japan. Hokkaido is known for their Ainu people. It's basically the indigenous that were in Japan before the Japanese, as we know them today, came from China, like back in the days. They've been repressed a lot, like they are not as present in society as they used to be, but I was listening to a lot of Ainu music and looking at visuals from them, and I felt inspired by the rawness of their movement and the way that they are as people. And I actually started wondering, that's actually slowed down during this residency. I took a lot of my old work and I look at it, wondering what I could explore that was really true to myself. And I found a lot of images of body movement, and like pictures I've collected on Pinterest for many years. Like, I did a series called Bloom, where I explore body movements and healing properties of those movements on the body. During that time, I focused mainly on like contemporary dance. It's a way also for me to explore, like, movement with myself. So I'm doing it right now, like, as an almost daily practice, and it frees me a lot.
Yeah, so the movement is helping you connect to your artistic voice.
Yeah, because to me, the same thing is coming out of there. I've always been fascinated, like, especially when I came back to creativity after being blocked for 10 years. Because, yeah, I stopped drawing completely, creating anything from 16 years old to 25, 26. And when I came back to it, it was very raw, very spiritual. I was only doing meditative drawings while listening to music that was putting me in trance. I mean, I kept this creative process because I never plan what I do. And I can't plan what I do because I honestly feel like I'm not in control of what I do. I witness what happens when I let go. So when I occupy my mind with a podcast, with a music that put me in trance, and then the drawing happens when I'm not trying to do something. Like, I'm just focused on the other things, and then the drawing happens. So I witnessed that when I did Reiki training here in Bali. Like, I did level 1 and 2, and it's the same. Like, you receive the ability to heal, and you are not the one healing. You place your hand where they need to be placed, and the healing happens. And I don't know where the energy is going to go. I don't control it. And it's the same with freestyle movement. I surrender to the music, but I don't know which moves I'm going to do.
Yeah, I like what you said about you occupy your mind, whether it's with the music or with a podcast or something, so that that is taken care of, your mind is taken care of, and then there's the space for whatever wants to come through you to come through you.
Yeah, exactly.
One little question is, you said you're leaving Bali soon. How do you know when you're ready to move on, and where are you moving to?
To be honest, it's very like, especially now, like living in Bali, I surrender even more than I've been surrendering over the past years. Basically, I knew September would be the time for me to leave. So I booked my ticket a few months ago. And I just booked the cheapest ticket back to Europe from Bali. And it's Berlin. So I'm going to Germany next. So I'm going to be volunteering in a holistic place, like where that focuses on Kundalini yoga. I'm going to be volunteering there as a creative. So I would do some murals, basically drawing body movements. And that's something that I had, that I was trying to manifest already before, like when I did my residency in Japan, and when I did my, you know, I did my exhibition on body movement and my presentation. I told myself, oh, it would be amazing if I could draw and keep exploring that in a community or in a yoga studio or like holistic place anywhere else in the world. And that's what I found in Berlin, basically.
So it's interesting. There's two things there. One is the way that you're living your life is the same way that you create a piece of art, which is just letting whatever come through you, come through you, and whatever is the next thing to pursue the next thing. There's just this real trust and flow. And I recognize that it may not always feel that way, but that thread of surrendering and listening, tuning in and trusting and following that. And it's just fascinating to see that the way you're living your life mirrors the same process that you have in your art. And then the other thing about saying in Japan, oh, wouldn't it be great if this is what I want? That by stating what it is you want, that you then moved into that.
Yes. And as you said, like when it happens, like it doesn't feel as like effortless and smooth. And there's a lot of self-doubts. Obviously, I feel like I'm lost in my life. At the age I am, I should be doing this and that. But then again, looking back, and that's what I appreciate with doing, like when I did the podcast episode, like explaining about my life path, is I realized looking back how things were well crafted. But at the time, I just felt like I was lost. It didn't make sense at all. And even now, I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to do next. But I still have self-doubts. And I'm like, is it really what I want to do? But you're right. Yeah. Like it keeps coming back in many different ways. And I just have to keep coming back to it all the time, because exactly. I get sidetracked by what I should be doing instead.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's the same thing with I should be doing this kind of art, or I should be adding more color to my pictures. I shouldn't be wandering in the way that I am. I should already be at this place in my life. Like it's all made up, and yet we can let it completely throw us off to that place where we then end up burnt out and depressed.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So actually what I want to start with is minimalism, because I know that it's a really big part of who you are. It's a big part of your life, and it's also a part of your art. I want to explore how minimalism shows up for you in your life and why it's so important to you.
So basically I grew up with, my parents are, they are hoarders. Like the house was full. Like basically I always joke about the fact that where I grew up, where always like it felt like I was in a flea market. You had so many things everywhere. It was literally a storage space. You had so basically my parents, I think, were numbing their pain and their life discomfort with shopping. So they were constantly buying new things. It was ways for us to also kind of connect, because we will go every Sunday, or most Sundays we will go to like flea markets together, and it was great. But then at the time I felt suffocated by the amount of objects we had in the house. And I remember whenever I was going to visit a friend as a child, I was always so envious about how their room were so neat, clean, like, and very, very much themselves. Like, it felt like everything was had a purpose. While in my house, in my room, I had my stuff, but also a lot of storage from my parents. Like, basically, it was an overload of some of my parents' stuff, plus things that I was allowed to keep in my room. And I was usually sharing my room with another member of the family, so I was never really able to have a place that reflected where I was. So when I started traveling, initially, I was a bit like them, you know, I was bringing my whole life with me, like 2-3 suitcases, and it felt really painful. Like, when I had to carry so much things with me, like, very quickly, I started becoming more intentional about what I was choosing to bring with me during my journeys. Like, I was doing this, like, very, you know, casually. I didn't know what was minimalism at the time. In a way, I basically used that process of becoming, like, by becoming very much intentional about what I was keeping with me, what I was buying and keeping with me, I also kept using, like, the same pens over and over again without feeling guilty. And one of those pens is the one that allowed me to unlock my creative block. Because I was so in love with that pen, I loved writing with it. So naturally, when I felt like drawing again, that's the pen I used. And that's why I have mainly drawings in black and white. Because I was using that one pen from Muji.
Well, and when you started adding things back in, like color, for example, and you did it because you felt like you should, what did you feel as you were making that? Like, did it feel like art that you wanted to be making?
No, it was painful.
It was painful.
Like, basically, it felt like a struggle. I was like, oh, because, you know, like, somehow, I don't know, I guess I'm not the only one to think that, but I felt guilty because what I was doing was too easy. Like, it's too natural. It's just coming too easily. Like, I need to have a challenge. Like, I need to add something else, like, that shows that I'm technically more advanced than that. It's very silly because I know, like, when I was younger, I used to draw way more, like, intricate drawings than now. And if I want to, I can also, like, be much more realistic with my drawings. But that's not something that comes naturally, and I don't really like doing it.
It's all part of that stage of letting go of the rules, but also your ideas of it's too easy. It should be more complicated. What will people think? Because it comes so naturally to me. So clearly it must not be that amazing. So letting go of that. And I liked how you said with minimalism that you were paying attention to what you were keeping with you, which is the same, it's all part of that same, what I'm keeping with me and what I'm letting go of.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So as you've moved through this, like, so you've incorporated minimalism into your life, and you also, the other piece actually that I want to touch on just with your art is wabi-sabi, because that had a really big impact on you. Talk about just how wabi-sabi affected your art and what you create with your voice.
Yeah. So basically, when I was still very self-conscious and not actually telling myself that I was an artist, I was living in Iceland. I was there just for 6 months, but that was the very beginning of me coming back to my creativity. And I remember, like, I purchased the book Wabi Sabi, like the book from Leonard Cohen, Karen, Wabi Sabi for artists, designers, poets, and philosophers. And I really, really loved like these principles of, like, finding beauty in things that are imperfect, incomplete, and impermanent, and especially the imperfection part. And that's actually resonated very much with what I was experiencing in Iceland, because there, people are very, very spontaneous in whatever they do. They don't care about anything. because most people are actually creative there. Like they don't necessarily do it professionally. Like it's something that they do alongside like another, like a day job. But it's a therapeutic way for them to fight the darkness, like the very long dark nights that they have during winter and the cold. I mean, it's not that cold, but yeah. So I felt like whenever I was going to an exhibition there, and even with my ex partner who was Icelandic and the reason why I moved there, I felt like he was just playful with creativity. It was not that serious. And coming from France, where art is like very elitist, and you feel like you have to be a genius or don't do anything, I felt like it was very liberating for me. And reading that book about like embracing imperfection and finding beauty in imperfection, I was like, wow, it was really mind-blowing for me. It was like, oh, I have the permission to actually do whatever I want just because I feel it.
It's amazing to me the impact that our culture has on us.
Yeah.
And for you to be able to see, had you grown up and stayed in France, where there is this idea of art as something that is elitist and what you needed to call yourself an artist and how good or whatever you needed to be an artist, and then to go somewhere like Iceland and see that that's just a natural part of how people live their lives, is not just creativity, but a very spontaneous, playful way of creating. And how much that changed the way you saw your own art and your own creativity.
Exactly. For me, traveling is no more about like discovering new places and like taking pictures of places I've never been, or like, or even being a tourist anymore. It's just about seeing how it can impact who I am. There's obviously the part of discovering, meeting new people, discovering new cultures. But the most fascinating to me is seeing what comes up, like which part of my subconscious will be triggered. Basically, even by moving to Bali, like I came with a lot of narrative about what I thought I was and what I thought I was scared about. Everything got challenged. When I arrived 6 months ago, I was scared. I've never driven anything else than a bicycle. And the last time I drove a bicycle was in Denmark when I was living there because I had no choice. So I thought I was not a good driver. Like it was impossible for me to drive a scooter, which is what everybody does. I thought I was scared of dogs and I would never be friends with a dog. I thought I was not a good dancer. I mean, there's many things I thought were true about myself, but today I drive my scooter every day and I hang out with the dog of my landlord all the time, and I dance almost every week. Wow. Like in the middle of many people. So I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. I didn't know I was all of that too.
That is incredible. So what would you say to someone who is not, like most of us are going to take off to Bali or take off to Berlin and Iceland and all these places? What are other ways that you can tap into that expansive mindset and the ways to let go of all the small, limited perspectives that we hold about ourselves?
I would advise anyone to spend time alone, like as much as possible. I know it's not possible for everyone, obviously, but whenever you can, just step back from the world, like retreat within yourself. Take, I don't know, even if it's like maybe a few hours, it can be few days, few weeks, few months, if you can, if you have the luxury to, but just spend time alone to really have the headspace to reflect really on who you can become and who you really are. Because most of the time we are surrounded by, like, even if it's not the same people, but we are surrounded by familiar things that shape our identity, and we think that that's the container we can actually be part of. But when we step back, that's only when we can actually rewrite our story.
Okay, one of the things that comes up for me when I hear you say that, and I really value alone time, and what I've been noticing about myself is talking about the limiting beliefs and society's rules and all of that, is I have this story of, okay, I can give myself that gift right? That's how I phrase it. I can give myself that gift of being alone once I've done all this other stuff, once I've gotten this list. And what I find is I just end up like running in circles, because what I really need is that time alone and that time to reflect. I'm wondering, what are some ways that you give that to yourself, even when there may be stories of, but I have to get all this done first, or this is what it looks like to be a responsible adult, or I'll get to that when?
I mean, maybe it's easier for me because I'm an Aries and I'm very, like, I'm quite radical. Like, for example, I was in jobs where I was supposed, like, you know, they were like permanent jobs where I had commitment, and I just quit. Like, I mean, it's quite radical, but when I feel the urge, that's the thing, I keep reminding myself over and over again that our life is temporary. Nothing is permanent. We can die tomorrow. So if I feel that right now I'm not feeling comfortable where I am, and if me giving up on the commitment doesn't lead, like, obviously, if I had maybe like if I was a parent, or if I had like, you know, like a bigger commitment, it would be different. But for me, a job is not more important than my own well-being. Because at the end of the day, you are, you know, investing your time for a boss, for someone else. So if I feel that urge to quit, I just quit. Even if I don't know what I'm going to do next, I just do it.
Yeah.
And usually, and things always figure themselves out, like always.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. I do see that over and over again, is when I trust that over my idea of what I should be doing or how I should be doing things, that things work out.
Yeah, always.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason why you feel the urge to, because otherwise you wouldn't. Because there are jobs where I felt really happy at the beginning, like everything was flowing, I was just super like enjoying it so much. And then suddenly things shift. And if you don't listen to that first sign, I mean, it can show in many different ways. It can be through like a illness, it can be through depression, it can be through so many different things. If you don't listen to it, it will keep showing up in so many different ways until you get laid off, or an accident happen, or something even like more dramatic. But you have to learn to listen.
Yeah.
That's why I will encourage also, like, in stepping away from the world, like to meditate in a way or another. Find a way to know, to pay attention to those signs, whether they are in your body or outside yourself.
Tuning into however the information is coming to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, one of the things that you said was, if you do not create whatever you are craving to create now, however self-conscious you are, it will never exist and will be lost forever. I have two things I want to ask about that. One is, one of the things that I hear and that I have personally experienced is the limiting belief that comes up that says, well, but what I have to say is really not that important. Is it really valuable? Does it matter? So when we hold this idea of, oh, I have to create the thing I'm craving, because if I don't, it will be lost forever, there seems to often rise up right alongside that this story of, but it's not really that valuable. Who really cares? Will it make a difference? Do you have that come up for you?
I had at the beginning. I mean, now look, I have a following on social media, so it helps to kind of know that at least one person cares, which is good. But at the time, especially at the beginning, when I was still, you know, coming out of my shell, I was very, very self-conscious. And I was always, of course, telling myself, like, I mean, what is, like, this is not art, like, this is not that important. It felt good. It just felt good to do it. Even if no one was watching, I just enjoyed doing it.
So again, it comes back to trusting that.
Yeah, because even if it's not for other people, it's still therapeutic. And I think it kind of make you, it's a soothing experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it has benefits like for your relationships or how you show up in the world as well, knowing that you have that safe space that you can explore where you can be yourself. That's good enough. It's self-care.
Yeah.
And it's overused nowadays, but it's self-care if you really enjoy doing it. But then I would urge anyone to share. Like, it might be controversial, but I feel like, because for me, I'm so grateful, like, along this journey that I've been able to witness other people. If I didn't have, like, other people sharing their work in their own way, I wouldn't have felt the permission to actually do the same.
Yeah.
And there might be someone somewhere who will be touched by what you are going to share, no matter how imperfect it is. And I feel like the more imperfect things are, that's why I really embrace it, the more it gives people permission to actually do it as well. They're like, oh, but, you know, it's like when I worked at the company where I was, I had a graphic design intern. I was managing him. And it's basically by seeing him not being that good at what he was doing that I was like, oh, wait a minute. So if he can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah.
It's actually, it's so powerful to actually be someone on the making, showing up, like as imperfect as they are, showing up.
Yes, that's such a beautiful way to put it, because it's true. When somebody's willing to put out what they're doing in the imperfect way that we all, you know, whatever we create is imperfect, and it does, it gives permission to everyone else. Like, you don't have to have it all looking perfect. You don't have to have all the filters. You don't have to have all the things in place. You just make your thing and share it.
Yeah, exactly.
So along with that last thing, that the quote that I read, and then there was something else that you said, no one else can do what you do and share the experiences you've had. So you're trying not to miss an opportunity to share them with whoever can resonate. I'm wondering what then, and you've spoken to this in some ways, but what is most important for you right now to communicate through your work?
My interests outside illustration. Because I feel like my life is actually, in many ways, I mean, my interests are very much informing my work. So I'm giving myself permission to explore other avenues, other careers, an interest I've had for a very long time, which have nothing to do with creativity. Because I'm telling myself that no matter what I will do in my life, if I'm passionate about it, it will give me inspiration for my work. So yeah, like learning Reiki was part of it. Also, yeah, like movement, all sorts of body movements, and learning more about them, experiencing them. And going back to Europe, there's a couple of things I want to try, like shiatsu. I want to try like authentic movement kind of workshops, and maybe one day become a facilitator. I mean, there's many different things I want to go deeper into, even in the wellness industry or like spiritual world, which I feel can also enrich my life outside creativity. Because I keep telling myself, you know, especially as a freelancer, money doesn't always flow.
Yeah.
There are many days when I'm like, okay, maybe I should like find another job to to fill in my pockets while I wait for the next client to come, because I have little control over it. And I feel like if at least I can back up myself with another passion alongside creativity, it will allow me to have a richer life and just navigate through all of those passion and make a living out of it, instead of relying entirely on my work, on my creative work, and then having to do a job that I don't like for someone else.
So the last part of this is, first of all, I want to direct people to where they can see your work. And there's a couple different places. And also, I think it's fascinating to be directed to your work and then see what continues to emerge and what it evolves into. So one place where you can keep touch with Araki is on Instagram. And so I'll just say it's at, and I'll spell it, ARAKI.KOMAN. That's Instagram. And then there's your website, arakikoman.com. And then preciousimplicity.com is another website. So through those three, you'll be able to see the art, you'll be able to see different musings and things that are happening in Araki's life. You'll be able to see all the things about minimalism and simplicity and visual anthropology and slow living and all the other ways that Araki expresses her work. So then the next piece is the gratitude. And one of the things that I'm really struck by in this conversation is how creative your life is and how, whether or not you perceive it this way, how much courage you have to let your life be its own work of art and to just follow the next thing and the next thing to turn you into this whole multi-passionate, like multicultural, very rich, diverse human being, like within in your own world. And I just
thank you so much.
Yeah. I think it's so valuable because we do tend to have our world get narrower and narrower as we get older and get more caught up in what we should be doing and the right path and all of that. And what I hear in my conversation with you is just this ever expanding creative journey. And I find it so inspiring and I'm really grateful for it.
Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Yeah, you're welcome. The last question I want to ask, so this really ties into everything we've been saying, but also ties into what I brought in the beginning with the quote that I read, which is this idea of being the true authentic creative that you are, or becoming the true authentic creative that you are, the true authentic person that you are. At this point in your journey, what does that look like for you to be truly authentic in your creativity and in your life?
I would say it's basically just accepting who I am. Because in this quest that we have, like, of self-development, you know, personal development, usually we are more like focusing on the idea of like becoming someone else and improving ourselves. But what I'm really trying to do now, and like in my work and also in my life, is to accept who I am 100%. It's the hardest job ever, because there's always something that we think that are wrong with us. We usually focus on the things that are not working, but that's, I'm training myself to stop that constant self-criticism, yeah, that can basically ruin your life. Having that low self-worth can actually make you attract situations in your life that are not serving you, or just go like accept any commission, like creative commission, because you feel like you don't deserve any better. I just want to accept myself for who I am and unravel as much as that is not serving me as possible.
That's great. Thank you so much. It's just been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much, Daphne. I really, really enjoy the questions, like the very insightful question that you ask. And I'm very happy to be on the Creative Habit podcast, which I've been listening to since, I think, a year. But I really enjoy your interview.
Thank you. I'm Daphne Cohen, and you've been listening to the Creativity Habit podcast. For more conversations with brave and experimental artists, and to learn more about the collective, head on over to thecreativityhabit.com. And you can follow The Creativity Habit on Instagram. And I want to thank everyone for supporting the podcast, for each person who has left a review, who has appreciated the podcast in some way. Not only does it fill my heart with so much gratitude to know that it's making a difference and to know that it is supporting you on your creative path, but every time a person leaves a review, every time a person shares about the podcast with a friend of theirs, another artist, another maker, it helps these artists that I interview be found by more and more people. It helps spread the word of all the creativity that's happening in the world and how much each person can make a difference with their own making. So thank you, and thank you for listening.